welcome to Transcat. I'm Claire McCarthy.
Good morning, Claire.
Mr. Secretary, good morning. How are you?
How are you?
Welcome back to Connecticut.
Yeah. Happy to be here with you.
For students who are trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming, it has pretty much been a year of walking around with a target on your back. Fair to say?
I think that's light, putting it lightly.
Yeah.
I think across our country, we've seen over 600 laws proposed or passed that really target students, LGBTQI students. And it's almost become normalized now. I've seen a change, even from when I started as secretary till now, with parents, with educators who are teaching and learning in fear. It's sad. It seems that given the elections coming up, some are using that as a base for their messaging, which is so un-American and unacceptable.
I couldn't agree more. I'm going to read something that you don't need me to read, but maybe some of the listeners do. No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. So how should the federal government be interpreting Title IX for trans kids?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, no person, right? When I had the hearing last month, it kept coming up, right? It seemed like everyone was looking to get a nice Twitter clip. But at the end of the day, no person, period, right? It doesn't say no person if you agree with what they believe or what how they identify. No person. So while some use our Title IX proposal, right now it is a proposal, while some use that to try to create division, for me, I take a step back. That's why I don't engage in some of the wordplay that they're trying to engage me in. And no person should be discriminated based on their gender. So for me, I want to take a step back and I really want to just humanize this. Like, look, we're talking about kids. You know, my experience as an educator and as a dad, we're talking about kids and we're talking about making sure all children are able to benefit from what our schools provide. You know, our public schools, in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, our public schools are the only way students can engage in a sense of community, after-school programming, athletics, clubs, the theater, arts, right? Public schools. So for me, I want to defend every student's ability to engage in that. We know they learn about themselves. They develop and find hidden talents that they didn't know they had. They learn how to work as a member of a team. There's so much value.
Leadership skills, interpersonal skills, just emotional well-being skills.
Yeah, there's so many values and life skills that are learned through these processes. And I stand behind making sure that all students benefit from that, especially if there are students who are being targeted by some, they need those skills. You can argue more, right? They need those opportunities more. So some are going to wordplay and try to make it fit their discriminatory belief system, but I won't let it happen.
Thank you for that. I did see the excerpt of you being asked that, as you say, Twitter-worthy question of what is a woman. Now, mm-hmm. You individually, you have firsthand experience of what could fairly be described as marginalized groups. You were part of an ESL program when you were coming up through the Meriden schools. You worked, I believe, in a classroom with autistic kids. What does equity mean in terms of marginalized groups and particularly queer kids?
Yeah. I grew up, I learned Spanish before English, being a Latino in Meriden, was able to, and I have to say, I say that with pride. My experience growing up in a town, a city as diverse as Meriden is, in my opinion, part of the reason why I'm here. So I look at that as an asset to my preparation. I always served as a school principal for a school that had students that were in a bilingual program, children who had multiple handicaps, children who were on the spectrum, including autism, children with Down syndrome. And it was one of the best experiences of my life to see how those students can come together and create a culture of one, right? The differences being respected. So that was my experience as an educator. And I always used to say that when, you know, working in a school that has so many different programs like that of children with different abilities made our school stronger. All students came out better because they were able to engage with people that were different than them. And I think for me, oftentimes we attribute subconsciously a deficit mentality to someone who's learning a language, right? They don't have dominance of English. They're learning English. So there's a deficit mentality oftentimes that's prescribed to them. Yet they have a native language that most others don't understand, or a native culture or assets that they bring that are not often valued or respected or even acknowledged. Children with disabilities, similarly. You know, yes, we have children with IEPs that have, they learn differently, but we run the risk of shortchanging that child if we just look at what disability they have. They have so many strengths and abilities. And I think it's critical that we frame our role as educators to look at the assets that children bring to the table. When we talk about students, LGBTQI students, we need to also recognize that, yes, this is something, you know, that they identify as, but they are more than that. You know, they are more than that. They are beautiful human beings with skills and talents, and they can contribute to the whole school body. Like, you know, if people looked at me and looked at me only as a Latino and didn't recognize the skills and attributes that I had to develop leadership skills and bring out the best in the teachers that I oversaw, then they're limiting me to one element of my identity. I'm proud of that identity. But, you know, oftentimes when I became a leader, people looked at me as the Latino leader. And, you know, nowhere in my doctorate does it say Latino doctorate, right?
Right.
So it's a part of me, a very proud part of me, but it doesn't define me only. And I think oftentimes in this country, what we do is we define students by an attribute, and then we limit them to that. And I think we're shortchanging them, and we're shortchanging the community in which they learn.
These are going to be people who are part of your community. They're bringing these skills. I'm saying this as a former teacher. Our job was to prepare kids for the workplace. Well, it's a diverse workplace out there, and you don't have the option of saying, oh, I don't want to work with these people. They make me uncomfortable.
Totally. I mean, and again, I go back to my experience growing up as a young man in Meriden, where I got to learn from people that were very different than me. I remember my high school experience where, you know, I was learning with people that were totally different culturally, you know, in many different ways. And being able to navigate that space and code switch and culture switch and then become comfortable with that, in my opinion, sharpened my skill set.
Of course.
That allowed me to reopen schools when I had to work with people that were different, people that had different opinions, so on and so forth.
Yeah, build consensus. One last question, because I know you have to go. You are the head of the federal Department of Education, but education in America is a local and state series of entities.
Right.
What I want to ask is, how frustrating is that? But but how do you deal with that is probably more the more professional way to ask.
No, you know, and I've been asked that before. Look, I think it's designed the way it should be. I was a district leader, right? The last thing I wanted is somebody in DC telling me what to do. You know, I was a school principal, and the last thing I wanted is someone 15 layers removed from the classroom telling me what's best for the classroom. I was a state chief. And while, to be very frank with you, when the pandemic came, I kind of wish I had a little bit more guidance from the federal government. But I also knew that education is a state responsibility. So in my role now, I recognize, because I had experience at all levels, that my job is to lift up best practices, provide guidance, where necessary, stand up under the Office for Civil Rights on the civil rights of students. Without question, unapologetically, we're going to stand up all day for students whose rights are being taken away. But providing examples of what works best, funneling dollars toward those things that we know are going to address the inequities that we've normalized in this country. But at the same time, I recognize that it is a limited role, right?
Right.
We're going to continue to advocate for funding. We're going to make sure that the funding goes in ways that promotes equity. And we're going to defend the rights of students. But we're also building capacity at different levels to make sure that folks stand up for themselves, have the tools that they need to fight for equity as well, especially now. And I think what I'm hearing in your question is, don't you wish you could just wave a wand and stop these local?
Yes.
What I want to do is make sure that our teachers and our students and our parents are empowered to exercise their rights and to fight for what's right in education. I have so much confidence in public education, in our parents, in our educators. We will continue to prevail to make sure that our students have good opportunities in all schools, despite a wave of ignorance taking over some state policy. I have confidence in our schools, in our public schools, and in our students.
Secretary Cardona, thank you so much for this. When you were the commissioner here in Connecticut, you stood up for us. You stood up to the federal government and helped protect trans athletes and trans students. And I wanted to say thank you for that. And also, please consider this an open invitation to come back and talk at greater length sometime. There's so much more that people need to hear.
Thank you, Claire. And you know, look, I, as a young man growing up Latino and seeing that sometimes people judged or mischaracterized, it reminded me of Dr. King's quote, you know, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. So we all have the responsibility, all of us, whatever position we are, to speak against injustice. I'm going to defend all students in this country and give them the opportunity to enjoy, you know, public education and all that means. I think it's my responsibility to make sure that we're protecting those who are being targeted. Today, it's a transgender student. Tomorrow, it might be another group of students. It's all of our responsibility to collectively stand behind all of our students. That's the role of public education. I'm blessed and honored and humbled to be in this position. I thank you for the support.
In April of this year, after 2 years of outreach and public comment, the Biden administration's DOE filed a notice of proposed rulemaking. This NPRM essentially states that any policy that categorically bans trans students is in violation of Title IX. And as the Secretary said in our conversation, it is at this moment only a proposal. I'll add a link in the show notes if you want more specifics. I'd like to end this episode on a statement the Secretary issued on this year's Trans Day of Visibility. On Transgender Day of Visibility, and every day, we must show transgender students that we see them and that we support them. We know many transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming students face challenges that can impact their mental health and their ability to thrive in school, not because of who they are, but because of the hostility directed at them. Unfortunately, this hostility is what follows when politicians are among those attempting to bully transgender students and their families and use state laws to limit who they can be in our school communities. It's unacceptable. It goes against what we stand for as a nation. Schools must be welcoming, affirming, and nurturing places for teaching and learning. The Department of Education will continue working together with parents and families, educators, and students so that we can achieve this goal for every young person. This has been Transcat. I'm Claire McCarthy. Thanks for listening. Let's talk soon.
This is Sadie McCarthy. I'm Claire's niece. Transcat is a production of Transcat Enterprises, LLC. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Join us on the web at transcat.com. That's TRANSQAT.com. There, you'll find links to Transcat, the blog, writing projects, speaking engagements, and more. You can also meet the team who thought spelling cat with a Q was a good idea. Follow Transcat on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Leave us a comment on whatever platform you use to stream this podcast. Just remember to be kind. She has enough self-esteem problems already. To reach Claire with a question or a suggestion for an upcoming episode, just use the contact page at the website or email her directly at crmtranscat@gmail.com. Thanks for listening!